Hello and welcome to the Matt's Movie Reviews Podcast. I am your host, Matthew Perkovich, and this is episode number 599. Releasing April 12 in theaters across the US is Sweet Dreams, a dramatic comedy that stars Johnny Knoxville as Morris, a successful music director whose out-of-control alcoholism lands him in a sober living facility called Sweet Dreams. As part of his recovery, Morris takes on the role of softball coach for a team of misfit addicts contending for a major prize in an amateur tournament. Also starring Theo Vaughn, Bobby Lee, and Kate Upton, Sweet Dreams hits that sweet spot between grounded drama, heartfelt comedy, and underdog sports movie. And joining me now is the writer and director of Sweet Dreams, Mr. Lige Sarkey. Lige, how are you today?
Good. How are you? Good
I'm
to
very
be.
well, thank you. Well, it's great to have you here. You know, I watched Sweet Dreams a couple of nights ago, and I have so many questions to ask about this film. I did as much background as I could just on yourself and the movie. Am I correct in that? So 4 years ago, you pick up a friend of yours from like a sober living facility, kind of similar to Sweet Dreams. And from that point, that's where you kind of have the idea or the germ or the idea of kind of making a movie in that kind of a facility like that. What was it about? Your mate's circumstance and also regarding this whole sober living experience that really said to you, you know, this is something that I think I can work with and create something here.
Yeah, I mean, I think the idea came just a little bit before that. You know, I'd watched a film that I really enjoyed and thought was a great movie, but it didn't like have that look of recovery that I feel like I kept seeing these repeat drab, depressing looks at like sobriety, alcoholism, whatever, you know, and it's a tough thing. And I think I had that in the back of my head shortly before picking up my friend from that sober living that God, it'd be nice to show this in a different light. And then I was like, always wanted to make a baseball movie. And I had been thinking about that too. This was, I think also shortly, a couple months maybe prior to picking my friend up that day. And then when I picked him up, I don't know if it was that day when I picked him up, but it was at some point we were talking. I was like, this would be a good setting for this idea, really. Yeah, that's the beginning. But it was slightly before that, just in a way of like it's been kind of percolating a bit about just trying to take a different look at this subject matter that I've never seen done in a way that's like more fun, like more real, really. Like if it was terrible, I wouldn't do it, you know. If it was not a good time, I would have never went stayed sober, you know. So just trying to bring the light to the subject a little bit.
You know, I've heard you say that before, and I was really curious, how much does movies and pop culture affect the ways people view not only sobriety, but the methods to get the sobriety? Do potential people who might go into these sober facilities, are they turned off by like depictions of what sobriety is and how it's depicted in movies and shows?
I think, you know, for me, I when I grew up, you know, my dad got sober when I was growing up, so I knew what it was. I had a different impression of it. Wasn't attracted to what he did at all. You know, what he had done looked to me like it was the end of my life. You know, this looked terrible. And in my experience is not that, you know. So I think the only experience you have is what you've seen, whether it's somebody close to you or not. And I know a lot of guys that have gotten sober that had no idea that there was this whole world. Like they didn't even know it exists. So yeah, I think you pick it up wherever you see it, whether it's, you know, someone you know, and you create an idea of that for yourself pretty quickly of what it is. And it's just a perspective. And if it's wrong, you know, my idea of thinking that getting sober, my life was going to be over, kept me out of getting sober for 20 years. You know, like I knew as a teenager, I was like, I got that thing my dad had, but I'm not going there. Like that, what am I going to do if I have to stop drinking? Like my life will be over, you know? So yeah, I think you just make up what, based off whatever you're watching, seeing your friends, family, whatever that is. So.
When it comes to kind of like partnering the baseball movie with the story about this man going through his sobriety, it's really interesting to me how sports plays a really pivotal role when it comes to people in recovery. In recovery of all different types. I was talking to a director who used to be actually a former NFL player, Nate Boyer. He did a film called MVP a few years ago, and that movie was about veterans and how when they came back from the war, and a lot of them kept succumbed to homelessness, alcoholism, addictions, etc. And his movie depicted how They came together to create this kind of like a training facility, UFC MMA training facility. And now that kind of helped a lot of people with their addictions because it gave them not only community, but it gave them purpose as well. The marrying of baseball in your movie kind of has that as well. It does not only gives like a thing about teamwork, but it talks about a purpose. There's a certain purpose behind them playing baseball. Was baseball always the number one thing you had in mind in regards to that avenue, that kind of activity to kind of not only distract the people who were dealing with addiction, but also gave them kind of like a lifeline of sorts to really focus on while going through the hard times of recovery?
Yeah, I think, I mean, you said it. It's community and it's teamwork and it's working together. It's like outside of just like the idea of the work to be sober seems, like a lot of not fun stuff, So it's you it could have been a bowling team. It would have worked probably similarly. I just like was a baseball fan. I've been a baseball fan for a while, and it just felt like the right setup. The Bad News Bears is been, if you can make it just a decent baseball movie, it's fun to watch. And I was like, how come the teams never, I feel like there's been a streak of people losing at the end. And I was like, can they just win again at the end? So
Right.
I kind of went back to this old, it's almost formulaic in a way that's just not exciting, but we tried to make it exciting, but you kind of know what's going to happen. But yeah, I don't know. It just like the, it gets you out of yourself when you're playing, you're not focused on you anymore. So it makes life more enjoyable, and you're out there to help each other, and it's a team sport, right? There's a little ego involved, but I don't know. It felt like a good setup for it, but I didn't have it in mind when that's what happened when I picked my friend up and I was like, oh, what would be good? Baseball, right? There's a lot of people. You need a group, and yeah, it just felt right. I didn't think of football or anything. Plus, football felt harder, and softball versus baseball, like anybody can play softball. So there's no real like skill level. You can be terrible and it still counts. Like it's just as much fun, I thought, watching people play terribly than it was to watch them play great, it's funnier actually. So
And forgive me if I'm wrong about this. Something I've always read about with people who go through sobriety is about the amount of time they have in their hands, time that would have been occupied maybe drinking or doing whatever else. And softball, baseball is a notoriously long game, so I'm sure having that time dedicated to something helps a lot as well.
It's just you don't want to sit by yourself ever, really. So just being in action and hanging out with people is, yeah. And baseball is a long game. You're right. Well, a softball game's not that long. It's like an
No.
hour and 15 minutes. But yeah, man, the more time you're doing stuff, hanging out with other people, the less you're thinking about yourself and how shitty your life is, So it's good for that.
Johnny Knoxville, how soon was he a part of the process here? Because I know he has his own life experiences as well in regards to sobriety. So did you know of him beforehand? Was he someone you had in mind for the movie? How did he kind of become part of the process of Sweet Dreams?
No, we started putting the cast. I started putting the cast together early on in the process, like after I had an early draft, with just some people that I knew. But the cast changed quite a bit over trying to put it together for first year and a half. And it was more a matter of people just kind of fell in and out based off schedule stuff. And I had an opportunity at this, a time probably 4 months before, like a window opened up, and I was like, who could this be? I had worked with this guy Albert Berger, who I produced Peanut Butter Falcon with. He had always talked about Johnny Knoxville, because he wanted Johnny in that movie. He's like, he's a serious actor, like people don't know that. And it's just always stuck with me. And I try to, when I think about cast, I really always try to think about the unexpected person. I just think it's more interesting, and that felt unexpected in a way that, like, he's known for comedy more. I know him more for comedy, and the movie's supposed to be funny, but his role is not funny. His role is like, it's very serious, The movie's not really funny. I mean, it's not jokes. It's just the funny comes from the absurdity and the banter, and the making fun of each other. And but for the Knoxville character, Morris, it was a very serious role, and I just hadn't seen Johnny do. I was like, that could be cool. That could be really interesting, And he really responded strongly to it. It was great, And I had a couple friends that were close to him, like, and I talked to them and was like, you think he would do that? That kind of whole back channel thing. And I was really helpful and he responded. So it was like, it was really cool how it worked out. And it was not what I thought of when I was writing it. You know, that's the thing. It was an excellent surprise.
Speaking of excellent surprise, the opening of the movie. I love character introductions. I like some there's some great character in cinema in the introduction of Morris to us, where he's at his lowest, sleeping on a park bench, woken up by someone's dog, bloodied face. You know something's like very wrong going on here with this guy. How did you come up with that idea to open the film in that way, where we're meeting him at his lowest ebb? And how did you come up with the idea that that would be for him? The lowest ebb for this character, for him to start his trajectory.
I don't know how that specific idea came to mind. I don't remember any. I've woken up like that. You know, I've woken up. You know what? I do know. So this is a personal story, but I was with my family over a holiday once, and I went out to a bar, and I think I ended up peeing on somebody's shoe in the bathroom, and I went outside, and they knocked me out, and I don't remember. I woke up in a dog bed with a black and blue face, not like John and the Morris woke up, but I woke up. And didn't know how that happened, you know, and that's what inspired. It's like all this is personal stuff. You know, it's been a long time since I've had a drink, so I can go back and I can laugh at this stuff now. But yeah, I mean, I put myself in similar situations over and over, you know. So, and then I have enough friends that have all been in those kind of situations too, and it's, you know, hopefully it's laughable now, but
An
yeah.
interesting thing about the character of Morris is that, and we are reminded throughout the movie that when it comes to addiction, when it comes to alcoholism, it isn't a class problem, it isn't a wealth problem, it's a people problem. An interesting thing about his character is that he's a very successful man. He's a very successful, you know, music director. The character that Jay Moore plays in the movie is also a very successful man as well. So really what it comes down to, I think, that I take away from this film is that no matter who you are, no matter what role you're playing in life, this thing can grab you, can grab anyone, and you can't buy your way out of it. You have to work from the inside out. That's something that really grabbed me when I watched it.
Yeah, I
I
agree.
would just, well, is that something that you've had experience with as well? Have you seen a lot of kind of like, I'm not asking to name names, but, you know, I imagine you've seen people that you thought maybe could be untouchables to really succumb to this kind of stuff.
I don't know. I'm not surprised by it anymore. I've just seen, you know, there's a such a variety of people that, you know, so this Kate Upton's character has that line that says, "Misery doesn't care what you look like," and I
Yeah.
think it rings true for anybody. Like, it doesn't matter who you are. And it's fun. You get surprised a lot by you think people that have it all materially, you know, just feel empty inside. And I think it's, you know, when you're trying to get your value and your self-worth from out there, it's really hard, you know, and it doesn't work. So what I've learned is like, it has to be here first, you know, and then it doesn't matter what you have materially. So, I'm more happy than I've ever been in my life, and I probably have a lot less than a lot of other folks that you'd think are happier. So, yeah, the simplicity is what attracts me, and I think a lot of guys that have, you know, gotten sober and they understand that, you know, just sort of the same way I do.
The thing I loved about Johnny's performance in the movie is his portrayal of vulnerability in the movie. AA meetings in the movie, like the meetings in the film, that's something that's always you always come back to the meetings all the time because it's all about, you know, opening yourself up and being vulnerable and such. And the thing I find interesting about Johnny Knoxville is that for so long, especially say for my generation who grew up watching Jackass and such, he's almost kind of like. And other guys in that clique, you know, Steve-O and such, are almost kind of like immortal figures, because we see them going through these feats of pain and torture and stuff that they place on themselves and still stand up surviving at the end. But they aren't immortal. They are like everyone else. And while they may walk away from, like, you know, crashing a shopping cart into a parked car or something, when it comes to a lot of other things, they can't walk away from it. You know, it's something that they have to really work on. And getting Johnny to show those vulnerabilities, especially in his AA scenes, I think it might take people a little aback a bit, because not only does it show his dramatic chops, but it shows that, you know, this guy has got something to say emotionally, because so much of his stuff has been physical before. That's how I was a storyteller. So what was it like doing those AA meetings, to kind of getting in, having him just kind of tap into that deep world I'm sure he has within him and kind of express those emotions on camera the way that he does in Sweet Dreams.
Yeah, I mean, well, when we first met, he let me know that this was very personal for him. He really related to this, and whether that was like to his first degree of him or a friend or whoever, I don't want to speak for him, but he didn't have a problem going there. From the first take, it was like that. So I mean, I don't want to speak for him, but I've heard him say it enough over the last few days that it was very personal. It's very personal to him. And there's some scenes in the movie where he reads, where he's talking about his daughter, and in those scenes he would his daughter worked on the movie with us, so she would read the scenes with him off camera, those ones. And man, it just hit him every time. It just hit him, in a way that's just like very powerful.
Please support Matt's movie reviews on Patreon. Get access to exclusive content, request movie reviews and top 10 lists, and help support my work. Please click on the Patreon link in the description below. The Matt's Movie Reviews podcast is brought to you by TeePublic. TeePublic is the world's largest marketplace for independent creators to sell their work on the highest quality merchandise. With over 1.2 million designs, TeePublic is sure to have something you will love. The Matt's Movie Reviews podcast is brought to you by Amazon. The world's leading online store, Amazon is your first stop to buy a wide range of products at competitive prices with fast delivery times. Amazon is also a world-class entertainment hub that includes Prime Video, Audible, Twitch, Amazon Music, and more. Sign up with Amazon today and experience the best in online shopping and entertainment. When it came to the casting of the supporting players, something that's really interesting, and I wanted to see if this was something that evolved naturally or was intentional. The casting of comics in the movie. You got Bobby Lee, you got Theo Vaughn. We talked about Jane Moore as well, and a bunch of others as well. And I know with Bobby Lee and Theo Vaughn, they have spoken on their podcasts about their own journeys and such when it comes to this stuff. So how much was it intentional that you wanted to get these guys in these roles, or was it just something that kind of changed as you were speaking before, the casting changed over the years, and it's something that where, hey man, let's Bobby might be good in this role, Theo might be good in this role. I mean, how does that kind of work out? What all these comics kind of assemble for your movie?
The Theo role, the Garvey role, I had him in mind early on. So when I asked him if he would do it, I had already like I felt like I was trying to write it for him. So I got really lucky with him wanting to be involved. And then Jake, the character in the movie, is a surfer guy, right? And when I fir the first few drafts, he could surf really well and all this, and I was watching the show Dave at the time, and I was like, God, the Gate is great, man. I had to get that guy in the movie. And so I just changed the role a little bit and approached Gata, hey, would you want to do this? And it was a weird situation because there's a lot I went to a lot of people specifically, and a lot I would say most of them responded very well to it. So I don't know, I feel like everybody has like a personal connection to this kind of a thing. I really do. I feel like everybody, whether that's your family member or a friend, somebody that struggled. So people related
When it comes to
more than I'm used to, happening. And so a lot of people that I asked kind of said yes. And then it would shift, people's schedules change and I would have to go to someone else, but I went to a lot of people that I know first.
when you have that many comics in the one movie, how much does improvisation kind of come up? Do they add little kind of bits and bobs into their in processes, or because we're dealing with an indie project? Also, I imagine you were filming this maybe during COVID conditions as well. I'm not sure about the timing. Is there no time to kind of explore in that kind of way?
Yeah, no, they definitely explored, a lot of the softball, they had more freedom because it was less scripted, it was more plays, like we have to do this play, this play, this. So they were just riffing all the time out there, and it's just funny. They just give each other such a hard time. But then, we'd have those 8-person scenes, 10-person scenes, and we just try really hard to get it, and we're like, okay, we got it, and then we'd screw around, and they make the most of screwing around. It doesn't take a lot. So, yeah, there's a lot of improvisation in the movie. But we did a good job of getting the scripted version as well. So,
Where
I
did
mean,
you find
they're
a
just funny to watch hang out, you know? So Theo said it early on. He's like, you just point the camera at Bobby and it's great, you know? And we did that, point the camera at Bobby, and he's just so funny in the movie, you know? And Theo's so funny, just naturally so funny. And Gady was so good. Mo was so good of being like this grounding force in the home. And then Kate was awesome. And Jay Moore was like a huge surprise. Like, not for me. Like, I knew Jay was gonna kill it. And I went to Jay, and everybody's just like so impressed with Jay. And I don't know. I'm so happy with how all the cast showed up and turned out.
Where do you find the house itself, Sweet Dreams? Is that an actual facility? Was that something that you found just for the movie? How did it come about to find that place?
Did I tell you the secret? Oh, by the way, Amy Renee, who helped me cast a lot of the movie too, she should be congratulated. But yeah, that's a house that this is 6 feet under house.
Oh, right. Yeah. That's it. Okay.
The
I see it
very
now.
first
Yeah.
house we looked at, and I was like, I don't want to use a house that's already been in stuff, you know, whatever. And we just couldn't find something as good. So we ended up going back to that house.
That's cool. All right. When it comes to the house dynamic, like I said, a misfit group of addicts, and they all kind of got their own little quirks, own little personalities. How much of that is in the script? How much of that is that the cast themselves, who are strong personalities in their own right, kind of bring their own kind of little thing to these roles?
Yeah, I feel like everybody plays a version of themselves, you know, in the movie. I don't know that Knoxville's ever that serious in his real life. You know, I've spent a little bit of time with him. So that was maybe something that definitely something that he is not naturally always like that. Like, he's a more positive dude. But yeah, I mean, Mo is more grounded in the movie maybe than he is in real life, and just the way that he's such a lighter personality and more jokes and fun. But I don't know, I feel like everybody's kind of got a version of themselves going on in there. I tried to cast that way, like, except for like what I was saying earlier about Knoxville. I was like, I don't know if I've seen him in something like this, but like Gata, just be Gata, you know? Bobby, just be Bobby. Theo, be Theo. JBJ, yeah. I just, you know, my DP had told me about Dumbfounded, that, you know, Johnny Park, who's in the movie, and he's just him, you know. So a lot, yeah, most people played, not that they played themselves, they're still sitting there having, you know, doing their thing, but we cast in a way that the movie plays like a version of real life in a way, so it's cool.
Just on that note, in regards to the real life aspect, it feels very documentary to me. And I think in a lot of ways, the way that you use your camera, a lot of handheld. There are scenes. I think that one scene that really stood out for me. It was a small thing, maybe just because of my movie nerd brain. The scene where Morris first goes out to hit, and you're following the camera. You have it following him all the way up there. How much of your style has developed over the years, where you kind of have that kind of more documentary kind of style to your feature films? Because I know you've done documentaries before as well. Am I correct, or is it just feature
I've
films
worked
that you
on some
work on?
documentaries. But
Yeah.
you know, the big documentary, no, I think everything ends up being different. Like, the same DP, seeing how Yam, who I've worked with multiple times at this point, there's another movie I did prior to this that's not out yet, completely different, shot completely different, same DP, same director, same writer. That's like a kind of a thriller. And you know, Singh brings a ton to the table, because I'm just like, this is how I want it to feel. And he like, I didn't go to film school, I've learned by doing it over and over, and I just don't know shit. And so I really lean on him, and I'm like, this is how I want it to feel, this is what I'm thinking, these are some other movies that I like. And so he'll come up with a plan and we work together, but I lean on him more than anything, you know. And that Oneer that you're talking about, that was his idea. I didn't have that idea. Singh's like, I have an idea here, how would you like this? I'm like, this would be sick if it worked. And it worked, and it took us like, Johnny was so concerned about his hit, you know, but we had it more than once early on, but we wanted Johnny to have his hit. But yeah, that one worked. I love that shot.
Yeah, I like that shot too. It was something that really kind of stuck to me, because just to see him kind of, because at first he didn't want to hit, right? And then he's like, okay, I got to do this thing, and he kind of like walks out there. I really dug that as well. You mentioned a line in the movie that I really liked, which is the one that Kate Upton says, which was misery doesn't care what you look like. There's a very quotable movie, this one, because there's some great dialogue. One of my favorite ones as well, which I had written on here, focus on negative shit, you get negative shit, which is just it's simple in its logic, but it's also kind of like profound in a way that people don't think that way, because I think especially these days people just focus on negative shit. How much of those kind of those quotes, though, that the life advice stuff that's in the movie, how much of that is something that you learned over the years in regards to your recovery, your sobriety, your evolution as a person? Is that kind of stuff that you learned and you just wanted to share that with the world in the script?
Yeah, I mean, it's all stuff that I've learned, and that's exactly what I was trying to do. The focus on negative shit, I heard a guy like 5 years into my recovery talk about focusing on the things that work in your life, not the things that don't. And I spent the whole first 5 years of my recovery trying to fix my life and fix all the broken things. And I heard that and I was like, it was changed my whole perspective on the whole thing. And it blew my mind and it made everything so much better. And I started to look at my wife at all the, beautiful things she's doing instead of like how's the dishwasher's loaded the wrong way or the toilet paper's flipped over backwards and like start ignoring that shit, and focus on how great she is as a mom and how she reads to my kid at night and how I don't do that, and just all the positives. And I try to take that into my life and, and walk on the sunny side of the street. And it can sound kooky and hokey and whatever, but it's man, I was always trying to like make it myself and everyone around me be this perfect version so I could feel good. And instead of like, no, you just have to let go of all that and focus on the stuff that works. And so yeah, all the little things in there are all stuff I picked up here and there that that have worked, or stuff that doesn't work. That's also stuff that's in there too that I don't, so. And I just
Well,
don't
you
hear
should.
that stuff talked about much, in the recovery side of things. And I think it's important to at least have that option of a viewpoint to explore. I'm not here to tell people how or what to do by any means at all. I just want to try to show some light instead of the dark if it's possible,
And it's a, and you do it in a great way, and I really appreciate it, because that quote about focusing on negative shit, I think it's something that's really stuck with me as well. I think it's something I'm going to take with me going forward, because in my household with my kids and my family, we have a thing where we don't believe in perfection. It's nothing doesn't exist, and the saying practice is perfect. We change that to our house, which is practice is progress. You know, the more you do stuff, you're progressing, but you're never going to achieve perfection because it's unachievable, in my opinion, anyway. So everyone out there listening, April 12, Sweet Dreams, and I believe is also going to be a digital release a few days after that. But I encourage everyone to watch this in cinemas, because we
Yeah.
need films like this to be seen in cinemas. The more people watch movies like Sweet Dreams in cinemas, the more we get more movies like Sweet Dreams in cinemas. It's really important that people do that. And I'm just going to say, Lee Saki, thank you so very much for your time today. Thanks for your movie. It's great stuff you've done here. In the main way that you managed to bring all these different elements together, and like I said, hit that sweet spot between all of them. It's a really great job here. And congrats on the film. Congrats. Good luck in the film's release. And hopefully, we talk again in the future. It's been a pleasure.
Amen. Thank you, Matt. Matthew, Matt. I don't know which one to go by, but I appreciate
Either
it.
one.
Okay. Have a good one.
You too.